When it comes to flying your drone, trial and error is not a strategy. It's insanity. Insanity. So get your drone questions answered by the experts so you can save time and money by lowering your learning curve. And now your hosts, Rob Burdick and Paul Aitken.
Hey guys, and welcome to another awesome episode of Ask a Drone You. My name is Paul.
And I'm Rob, and you're listening to episode number 267. Thank you guys for spending a few minutes of your morning with us. It's a big morning.
It is a huge morning.
Friday, and number one.
Friday.
We always love Fridays.
TGIF.
Absolutely.
Got to say thanks for the Friday. But it is a bombshell. There is information, Rob. An interview we conducted yesterday, or actually I conducted, and we got some really interesting information on the new AIR Act, or the proposed drone law. And as you guys know, two bills were actually introduced to Congress just this week on drone law. And it's interesting to see, you know, what are the similarities, what are the differences, what really matters about this. But then, Rob, as we were talking to John, he just dropped a bombshell.
It was a bombshell. But before we address that in terms of what we're talking about here, I just have to say John's awesome because
he is.
Man, anytime something new comes out, he is on it, he's in it, he's digging in, and he's letting you know what it actually says.
Mm-hmm. What it's all about.
Via this podcast and other means. We really, really appreciate that.
I don't think there are many means beyond the podcast. I know he has his blog, but I think this is pretty much his outlet, we're grateful to have John come on the show and give you guys the information that you need. But I will say, John does a lot more for this community than you guys ever knew about.
Ooh, that sounds like, I don't know, you want to tell people something?
Well, all I got to say is that in the end of this interview, and I was literally like, when I was talking to him yesterday, I literally was like, all right, well, I guess we kind of got everything out of him. And then he's like, well, let me tell you something about the John Taylor case, right? Everyone thought the John Taylor case, if you guys remember, this is the lawsuit against drone registration that was conducted by and is being conducted by a lawyer named John Taylor. But the thing is, John Taylor is an insurance lawyer. He's a big hobbyist guy. He loves to fly. He just wanted to fight the FAA because he didn't think anyone else would. And we all thought, well, you know, we're excited that someone's fighting the FAA, but, you know, good luck, right?
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think because of that, people thought, well, all right, that's cool. I'm glad somebody's sort of taken the lead in that. But is he really going to be able to get anywhere with this?
Well, the news that John is going to give everyone is definitely going to change your perception on that case. So you guys got to listen. Rob, are you ready for it?
Let's do it.
Let's do a little special thanks to our sponsors. So guys, thank you everyone who does support this podcast. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for the reviews. And thank you for telling people about the Don't Crash course. Word is getting out. And guys, it would be great if you shared this particular podcast because no one really knows what you're about to find out here today. And this, as John says, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. We have got to collectively persist in providing the correct information to dronies and people who are involved with drones and people who are just getting into drones. So special thanks to every one of our sponsors, Go Professional Cases. If you need a case, be sure to check out GPC and use offer code DRONEU15 for 10% off that case. And also special thanks to DroneU itself. So if you are new to drones, check out the don'tcrashcourse.com and leave us some love. Let's get to the interview. Hey, and welcome back, everyone. I have the blessing of being with Mr. Jonathan Ruprecht, who is our, well, call him our lawyer, call him our friend, whatever you want to call him. He's got the legal breakdown of what we need to know. So, John, thank you again so much for being on the show once again.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Dude, it's always awesome to have you. I know I probably shouldn't call you dude, but it is a habit of mine that I should probably break. So with the new AIR Act that came out this week, or I guess the bill, the proposal, and HR 4432, it seems like this is the week of new legal proposals for drones. Can you give us the breakdown? Can you tell us how this is going to affect current legislation? I mean, John, we come to you for the legal questions, and I think you're the pro here.
Right. Well, thank you so much for letting me talk on this. Both those bills were just recently introduced. They're just bills. They're not law yet, okay? If you need to know how this whole thing goes down, watch that Schoolhouse Rock thing. Go watch that, and that's, you can learn how this whole thing goes down. So this is just like, you know, the beginning here. We're seeing it starting to take form, and what's going on. Now, there can be amendments. There's stuff that can be stricken and changed and wording and stuff, but we're starting to see it take shape. Now, this isn't final. Just taking shape, but there's a couple of things that caught my eye. We have the both of them were requiring that you had to have insurance to actually operate, which I find really interesting. And I think it was actually intentionally. Tomorrow, over in Arlington, Virginia, they're actually setting up the UAS insurance organization, actually, like a consortium group. And I'm kind of wondering, like, how many of these guys are actually behind the scenes actively lobbying to get these insurance requirements put in there? You know, it's kind of a...
That's interesting. Are they requiring specific insurance caps or liability amounts? I mean, are you seeing anything like that in the bills?
From what I saw, I didn't see that. It was just there was some type of insurance, and there's going to be most... I mean, it's going to feel like these... it'll be kind of like a database. One of them, the one introduced by the individual from Oregon, his was saying that you actually have to show evidence to the FAA. So you're kind of looking at it like a motor vehicle insurance kind of setup, where the database of the insured guys is hooked up to the DMV, so they know, you know, what's going on there and stuff, whether or not they actually approve your exemption or COA or whatever. So. That was one interesting.
So they're creating
thing that I noticed.
So they're creating some sort of system so that they could spot check you on site when you're flying and see really if you're legit or not. I mean, this seems like it's almost the construction of a new DMV system for drones. It's drone MV.
Oh, right. Yeah, it could be something like that. You know, coming down the pike here. You know, but yeah, I definitely find it interesting because, you know, little birdies were telling me stuff regarding insurance, and then I just find it interesting, like, how the insurance or, you know, association was formed. Well, it's forming tomorrow, and then in both bills, they have that provision. So there are lobbyists and people, you know, working behind the scenes to, you know, try to gobble up some benefits here and stuff like that. And I think people in the drone industry need to start mobilizing. And so there's you know, there's people inside already established in the drone industry, and they don't really seem to be paying attention too much to what's going on with the model aircraft community and what's happening now with the whole John Taylor case, the Part 48 registration requirements. And it's interesting to note that with manned aviation, they pay attention to what's going on with the FAA and meddling with, if you will, their commercial and non-commercial brothers, because the FAA can then turn around and then start enacting other regulations or advisories or whatever, trying to meddle with, you know, them at some point. So, you know, the principle of good for the goose is good for the gander, everyone to remember. And so I would suggest everybody in the commercial sector take some time to focus on what's going down in that the three Taylor cases that are in the D.C. circuit currently right now, and the drone registration requirements, that the FAA basically went straight up against what Congress told them not to do. And so, well, with these two bills enacted, I mean, let's say one of them actually goes into law. Well, what's to stop the FAA from doing the same exact thing, again, like with their violation of 336 with the model aircraft protection and the Part 48 registration requirements? Who's to say that they don't start changing it up with these new bills, these commercial bills, the commercial bill, hey, let's get people out, you know, and immediately start flying to make money. Well, what's this keep FAA from just completely just changing things up and doing contrary to what they're doing? Like, you need to realize that it's going to play out, that Taylor case is going to play out for stuff going forward here that is going to affect the commercial realm. It's some interesting observations there, and I could say also what is not in any of those bills that I wish was is an explicit preemption provision saying that the navigable airspace and, you know, these drones, it's a completely preempted area from states actually intermeddling or creating any type of regulations whatsoever, and they could put a stop to this nonsense that's going on with, like, state of North Carolina that has a drone pilot's license. And, you know, recently there's that guy that just got arrested last week for flying a drone near an unmarked it was a helipad at a hospital. You could figure out if you're there in person, but if he didn't see it, you know, you could make that argument that he might have just been nearby and not seen it because it never even took off, and it didn't. It wasn't like schooling up. The guy was just doing a pre-flight, so they could put an end to all that. The LA prosecution's going right now. There's two prosecutions going on, city of LA against two drone operators. Multiple people have been arrested up in New York City for violating their drone laws. That's why there needs to be a provision specifically preempting drones from states, towns, counties, cities, municipalities, other people meddling around in the area.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, John. I couldn't agree with you more. What other commonalities, though, do you see between these new bills that have come out this week? I mean, we talked about insurance. What else do you see?
Oh, they're all trying to come up with some way to speed up the process, make it easier and quicker for people to get operational commercially. That's one thing there, because everyone's really frustrated with the 333 process, and it takes a really, really long time. So they're trying to do that. They're also trying to change up the 333 restrictions regarding beyond visual line of sight, because 333 is only for visual line of sight operations, not BVLOS. So if you want to kind of pioneer 333 ops, you know, in the BVLOS area, you're going to have to amend that the 333 process in some way so as to allow, you know, these BVLOS situations.
Would you say that there's direct proof that the lobbying efforts are a direct reflection of BVLOS in the 333 exemptions? I give the example of BNSF Railroad. You know, they're allowed to BVLOS. They're the only ones, but they also lobby heavily. Are you seeing that in the 333 exemption and process that what you can do is heavily dependent on the money and lobbying power that you have?
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, if you really want stuff to get done, lobbying, you know, definitely can get things done. You talk to the right people, make the right, you know, arguments, have the right proof, you can get doors and things, you know, open. Stuff can happen. So there is some push, I know, for BVLOS in the commercial realm. With BNSF Railways, I'm not entirely sure how they did that. I know they didn't go the 333 route. They most likely did some type of, like, the Flirty one. I don't know if you caught that one, which was the West Virginia one, where they did the drone delivery for the medical stuff.
Oh, yeah, I think it was Virginia.
Yeah, it was actually done under, like, a CRADA, a community, it's a cooperative research and development agreement with the National Institute of Health, who got the COA, and then Flirty flew under it. So it was kind of some interesting, creative workarounds, knowing how to use the public COA process to get, you know, your job done, because the public COA process isn't limited by 333 with the visual line of sight issues. Gotcha. So, you know, you want to go do certain things, you got to know how to work the system, and I think people are getting frustrated with that, and they want to amend the exemption process to allow beyond visual line of sight, as opposed to coming up with some weird setups with these COAs or going to a test site to get a COA, you know, for some research permit, you know, or whatever. It's becoming very difficult. You're pigeonholed with only certain types of things you can do, and you have to fit whatever you want to do in those specific types of operations. And certain operations just won't fit into them. So you're kind of limited. Like flight instruction is a real good example, how with a public COA, you're not going to be able to get a public COA because it's not considered a governmental function by the FAA under the enabling statutes that were created back in, like, 1958. So that was FAA's interpretation. So the only route that for that was the 333 route. So other types of operation, you're completely prohibited from the public COA route. And so it's just becoming difficult because you got to figure out which way you got to go to get this operation done. But then there's certain restrictions and requirements that apply in certain areas. You know, hey, if you can hang out in the public COA realm, that's great because you don't have a pilot's license requirement or an airworthiness certificate requirement. But it's a lot more difficult going with that route because initially just trying to get the declaration letter going is like a pain in the half with getting somebody to sign off on that. It's I'm having fun with that right now.
Yeah.
So it the whole area needs to be cleaned up, and it looks like both sides, both bills are doing a good job of trying to like come up with their own VWAS setup. So for long term implementation and experimentation there with the exemption, as opposed to coming up with really creative ways to get things done.
Interesting. Are you seeing any other things other than, so we've gone over insurance, we've gone over beyond visual line of sight, or BVLOS as you call it. Anything else that you're seeing right now, John? And before you answer that question, I do want to let the listeners know that we're going to have John Rupert on again sometime next week to give us a thorough breakdown of each bill. As you guys know, one of those bills was about 300 pages long, and it's going to take some time going through it. And Mr. Rupert is actually at a conference right now for industrial drones. So, John, I just want to say thanks again. We're looking forward to having you back on the program. Wanted to let everyone know that. Let's continue where we left off. So what other commonalities are you seeing?
I would say the overall frustration with the current lack of implementation and that the 323, you know, the difficulty there. I think those would be the two commonalities. But I also didn't see another thing, just another quick touching point. With the whole FMRA back in 2012 that was passed, what was not in there? A provision that said, well, if you don't do such and such by such and such a date, you know, you're going to get punished, FAA, by we're going to withhold funding or something like that, right? Well, in both of these bills, I didn't see anything like that, where you have a provision that will actually hold the FAA accountable. It's the same organization that has just completely missed deadlines. You know, in the Oregon one, the HR was a 4432 one, it says, like, hey, 30 days, within 30 days of the enactment of this act, we want you to have a test you can take, you know, and then you could actually go and, you know, do some commercial work. Well, what do you think, why would they keep that 30-day deadline unless there's some type of, you know, teeth behind it, a punishment? Oh, if you don't, oh, we're going to withhold, you know, so many millions of dollars. There's no provision like that. There's no preemption provision. And actually, out of all of these things, a preemption provision to stop the state, towns, counties, municipalities from meddling around, and a provision that punished the FAA with some type of withholding of funds if they didn't meet the deadline. Those two things would actually do far more than both of these bills combined and all their things. Those would actually do something, while these other ones are kind of like, hey, FAA, do this. Well, there's no punishment. You know, it's kind of like when your dad told you to do something.
And you didn't do it.
Dad, you know,
you just
right?
kept doing it over
like,
and over.
You see that, you saw that leather belt come out, you know, you're like, oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm doing it right now, right? Oh my gosh, I'm running. I'm doing it. And so it's the same thing. If the FAA is not going to be held accountable to Congress for this by, you know, losing funding of some sort, the FAA is just going to blow more and more deadlines, take more and more time, all in the name of safety. So,
well, do you think that the drone community at large could reach out to this Oregon congressman and ask him to, I guess it would be a ratification of this proposed bill, to have something like that? I mean, is that even possible?
Right. Well, yeah, you could reach out to him, ask for an amendment specifically. This is going to have to go through a lot of committees. You could actually reach out to your own senator, find out, you know, what senator you're in. What senator do you have? Well, this is actually specifically a House bill because it's going to be a funding bill.
Yeah.
That's where it originates. So find out with your House representative what committees he's on, and you might have a representative that is actually one of the committees that is going to be hearing these matters, and you can ask him to actually amend it and insert some of that provision to, you know, actually put teeth to, you know, don't, the FAA, you better do this or else, and also the preemption provision so as to stop these state, town, municipalities. But you're going to have some pushback there because the FAA is just going to always, you know, they're not going to be too happy with that. They're going to want to say, safety, safety, safety. That's why we shouldn't be, like, pushed too hard. And with the
yeah, but everything that they've done has not done anything for safety. Sorry, I'm throwing that in
right.
there.
Right, well, yeah, but then they'll say, well, you're going to cause us to be more unsafe, or I don't know.
Yeah.
There's going to be some pushback there. But I would suggest everyone needs to get involved and contact their elected officials to, you know, make your voice heard and reach out and get educated on these topics. Just don't start talking and sound stupid. Like, if you don't know what you're doing at this point, I would just say, like, you know, or
don't say anything.
Don't say anything. Please don't. And you should probably go and, you know, contact somebody who does know what they're doing and something about the law and
Well, I think, John, that's the idea of having you here. You know, the idea of having you here is to give people, you know, quality information that they can then kind of reciprocate, think about, create their position based off of what they hear in the media, what they hear from you, what they hear from other legal professionals and whatnot. So I think what we're doing now is a great help to a lot of people to establish a fundamental baseline of comments and theories that they can use while, you know, communicating with their congressman or woman. So I think it's actually a great step forward. Is there anything else that you're seeing, though? Because I know we're going to go more in-depth in this later, but anything else that you're seeing as far as commonalities between these two bills?
Those are just the two overarching commonalities that they're both trying to get around the 333 process or amend it to move forward with the with commercial implementation.
Well, then let me ask you this question. What is missing from these two bills?
Well, I mean, other than the preemption one and the, the lack of the teeth situation, I think they're pretty much addressing it fairly well. And from what I saw, the point, I can't really think of too many other things that are missing. But those are the two ones that stand out.
Now in the H.R. 4432, I noticed that there was a micro UAS kind of conditions and what they would like to see with micro UAS and really heavily limiting the regulations against micro UAS. Is there anything similar in the AIR bill that would allow for a micro UAS category?
Oh, actually, I don't remember. When I quickly looked it over, I don't remember seeing anything.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing it either. I was just wondering, maybe I missed something. I'll have to go back and look. But John, I just want to say I really appreciate having you on the show. I know everyone else appreciates having you on the show. If they want to read more about this, because I know you're going to blog about it. In case you guys don't know, John is an avid writer and rapper. I mean, how would he get his rapping in if he wasn't a good writer? So anyway, John, where can they find your blog and more information about this?
Sure, they can go to my blog at my website is jruprechtlaw.com, and there's a page right at the very top on the menu. You can actually click, my drone law blog. I haven't really blogged anything about it or anything since the drone the registration stuff, because I've just been busy behind the scenes with there's that John Taylor case, so I've been actually behind the scenes working on that. Very, very heavily. So,
who else is? That's interesting, because I don't think anyone has heard that publicly. I mean, I know you and I have talked about that for a while, but we haven't talked about that publicly. Nor has anyone else in my knowledge. Is there anyone else who's working on that case as well? Because that is a fundamental case.
I know, that's why I haven't blogged. I've just been offline. I've been working on that case. So John and I have been working on that case very heavily. It's not just myself. There are other individuals that are contributing heavily to it, providing expertise. So there's a group of us. I don't know how much more I can say other than, I'm involved. I put in a whole bunch of hours behind the scenes trying to resolve that. And that's kind of actually what's really interesting is that, looking at the case and, what's going on, like who's involved and who's not involved in that case. That's really just kind of telling to see who's very pro-drone and who's not pro-drone.
Well, you're now just teasing us right now. Now you're just having fun with us.
Yeah. Oh, and then there was that really cool thing. Oh, but I'm sorry. I can't tell you about it.
I would love to tell you who actually cares about you, but I can't.
Okay, well, I got to go talk about something so awesome and cool right now with someone I can't tell you about. So I got to go. No, but there's people behind the scenes. As over time, I think, I don't know who I can, I don't know how much more I can say about that, but I'm actively behind the scenes. That's why I haven't really been blogging much at all. I've just been kind of like offline working. So there's long-term ramifications on how that case.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I still need to order my Part 47 registration forms. I have been so bad about getting those done. I really need to do that. Well, anyway, John, thank you again for coming on board. Look forward to hearing you again next week. Hopefully we can schedule that time soon. But I know the audience appreciates you. I know the Drone U community in the private Facebook group appreciates you and appreciates those updates. And it seems like now the general public at large can appreciate you even more for what you are doing behind the scenes. And I will say thank you. Now, one last question. I donated to the D.C. Drone Fund group that was supposed to be helping John Taylor. Is that still the best place to go if people want to donate to that case and try to help that case out?
Yes. I mean, just to make a quick comment on that, I'm actually not getting paid for that. I'm doing all my stuff for pro bono for the community. So keep that in mind when everyone asks me for free advice. You know, like when people always troll about how attorneys charge higher prices, it's like, because, you know, attorneys are actually doing other things. They're trained at being really good at what they do, and they actually are going out and, doing things, trying to put a stop to this nonsense. The FAA doing something, or the cities, towns, counties, municipalities. So it's just, once again, going back to the point of just like, it's interesting to see who's being involved and who's not being involved when a buck's, when a buck's in play, everybody's involved. When no money's involved, it's really interesting to see who's really, interested in the community or what.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to talk to you more about that later. Do you remember the URL that if people want to go support that? I mean, is the money going to supporting the case? I mean, is it still helpful to donate? And if so, where can they go?
Oh, yes. We will be using the money that's been raised. We originally set it for $5,000. We have actually already met that goal. Primarily, it was going to be for bringing in additional attorneys, specialists to put input on specifically on the aviation litigation type of stuff like that. So, now, whether we're going to need any more funds going forward, I'm not exactly sure on that. We haven't really focused too much on that. We've been just focusing on, the issues of the case, what's going to happen there, and timelines and everything, the arguments. So they can, if they are interested, we're going to open a fund maybe back up in the future, maybe. I know that the drone community has been very generous so far at donating. Maybe I'll just get back to you if we need additional funds for litigation. I can get back to you on that and let you know. And we can put that in the show notes at some point.
Sounds good, John. Well, I know you're going to be coming back on the show again soon. So when you have that information, we can definitely release it. But John, thank you again for coming on to the Ask Drone U show and letting everyone know what this is all about. We all greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Definitely. All right, guys, we're going to get back to Rob and I, but I hope that gives you insight and information for what's going on in Congress with drones. This has been a big week for drones, and frankly, 2016, they say, could be the year of regulating the drones. I know 2015 was the year of the drone, and 2016 is the year of regulation. Anyway, guys, thanks again for listening. My name is Paul, and you are listening to the Ask Drone U podcast. Rob, what do you think? That was a lot of info.
What I think is that it's encouraging.
Super encouraging.
Because
there is light at the end of the tunnel.
There is a very bright light at the end of the tunnel. I think it makes the case much more substantive, much more intense in terms of the possibilities of success coming out of it.
Yeah.
And so, man, and I just can't believe that he revealed that right here for you on the podcast. That's awesome.
I mean, who would have thought that there were a bunch of drone lawyers behind John Taylor? Who would have thought that this is, how would you even say this? This is the Trojan horse of drone law.
Yeah, you know what, Paul? Maybe some people are out there saying, well, duh, we knew it couldn't have just been an insurance attorney that was going to make this happen. There's probably those folks that are going, I knew it.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that was just a conspiracy theory, though. But, guys, you heard it here first on Ask Drone U. Special thanks to John Rupret. If you do need to check out more about him, go to jrupretlaw.com. You can learn about John. He does do Section 333 exemptions. And just notification, he did our Section 333
exemption.
Yes, he did. So anyway, guys, again, special thanks to our sponsor, Go Professional Cases Multicopter Warehouse. Thank you, everyone. That's going to do it for us today. And we'll see you next week. My name is Paul.
And I'm Rob.
And this is Ask Drone U.
Thanks for listening to the Ask Drone U podcast. Be sure and tune in next time to your personal experts for answering your drone questions, Rob Burdick and Paul Aiken, so you can keep lowering your learning curve and save time and money. Time and money.